There's an ongoing fascination in our culture with the transient beauty of people and places. But there's a more enduring beauty that we could and probably should become aware of. And this is the inner beauty that arises when one undertakes the cultivation of the good human qualities that reside as a potential within our heart. Most spiritual traditions have a way and have the means for pointing to these qualities of the heart that are really the epitome, really, of what it's possible as a human being to experience and to develop. And these qualities are not so remote or secret or unknown. They're very common. They're very ordinary. They're quite mundane, really. When you think of those humans that you know personally, or that you know of historically, who have really developed some nobility in their life, who are they? And what is the quality that they display or that they exhibit that so captures our attention that we realize, oh, this is significant. It's not unique to any one person, but their development of it may be unique in the world. When you think of Mother Teresa, for example, here's a very humble, simple, really, woman who had a very simple task to help people die. To walk out on the streets of Calcutta, I believe it was, each morning, find those who were going to die that day, bring them to her nunnery, and care for them with the extraordinary love and compassion and really this very profoundly wise understanding. This is the way it is for all of us on some day. Each one of us will know this. And to develop this willingness and this enduring interest and this simple determination and this great love and compassion, all of which we feel within ourselves at times. But when it's in one person, developed to a high degree and sustained over a long period of time, we recognize that human being as really having done something special, really ennobled their life, and really, in a way, has ennobled ours, too, because they're offering us a view, a vision of what's possible for each one of us. It's the qualities of the heart that we recognize as being, well, ordinary humanness. And yet, for so many of us, we either fail to recognize it in ourselves or fail to value it, value them, and honor them, and to develop them in our own life to enable us, too, to really touch the depth of what it is possible to know as a human being. We have that capacity. We have that potential. And when one like Mother Teresa develops such a magnanimous heart and such a persevering energy, we recognize it. It's not a question of, is this a good thing to do or not? Is this left or right? Is this red or blue? It's just a good human thing to do. There are many others, both internationally and historically recognized and well-known, who have developed similar qualities, and I think now of Aung San Suu Kyi in Burma, who for so many years under house arrest has just patiently practiced her meditation and held within her heart the possibility of freedom for her country folk in Burma. Or you think of Nelson Mandela and what he endured for a kind of political freedom. Or Martin Luther King, who was fearless in speaking truth, pointing to the truth of the way it is for us. And the courage and the energy, the clarity and the generosity of spirit that it is possible to develop in this heart of ours. This kind of beauty, or these qualities, point to an inner beauty that is recognized worldwide. It's not limited to Christians or Buddhists or Muslims or Hindus or people in all cultures of all spiritual or religious persuasions would recognize these qualities as good human qualities, the best that their culture, their religion, could wish for in their members. And so too we can recognize within ourselves our own potential, and to the extent that we choose to cultivate any of them, all of them, to a degree or consistently, we too would and could ennoble our lives and ennoble the lives of all that we share this brief time on earth with. But lest we think that inner beauty is only recognized or developed in international or historical figures, even today, you met someone who displayed to you some care, some consideration, some presence of mind, some ease, some simplicity, some quality that allowed you to recognize them as a good person. Can we take the time? Do we have the capacity to be aware of that? To really value and to acknowledge and to reciprocate when our heart is touched by someone who has so realized humanness. Because to do that, to recognize, to acknowledge, to value this humanness, the development of humanity in someone, enhances your own. If we don't recognize it in others, we won't recognize it in ourselves. Or we won't even recognize the potential, and we certainly won't take advantage of it. And so just training our minds, our hearts, to appreciate these display or the development of these beautiful qualities of mind is a practice. It's a spiritual practice, or we could say it's a humanistic practice, or it's a practice for all humanity. When I speak about these inner qualities of beauty, there are many qualities. We could list dozens. But they fall under, or they all contain, or they have certain common attributes or certain common traits that I want to speak about tonight. And the first of it is that they ennoble our life. Nobility really doesn't get a lot of airtime in the West. It's kind of poo-pooed, or it's for the English, or, you know, for old-timers. But there really is kind of a spectrum of, or a gradient of, from baseness to nobility that we see displayed for us from the daily news to the bestseller list to our own life. And we recognize it. We recognize what is really gross, base, debased, and we also recognize what is really exalted. What is noble? We know. And it does us no good to be naive or to pretend otherwise. But neither should we kind of prematurely claim any nobility for ourselves, but just to work kind of in an anonymous way to ennoble our lives, knowing fully well that to the degree that we value and develop and enhance our own life, then everyone that we share life with will be touched in a very profound and significant way, not to enhance our own sense of importance or significance or recognition, but just to touch one another in this human world is so important. Think about it. We meet dozens of people every day. And many of our meetings fall within very scripted fields. We have commercial transactions with the clerk in the store, with a gas station attendant. We have, you know, employment, work-related contact with people. We have the occasional meeting of strangers for the first time. And there's a lot of familiar contact that, well, it's just familiar contact. But what is the greatest possible good that could come from any one of these meetings on any day? Just ask yourself, what is the greatest possible good that could come from meeting this person today and spending 5 minutes or 5 hours, 5 seconds? I was sitting in the lounge in the San Francisco airport today waiting for my plane, and it's a busy lounge, there's a lot of people, and there's phones and computers and Twitters and glitters and all kinds of things going. I was reading the newspaper, but a fellow came in and sat across from me, got on the phone, and was talking. I wasn't eavesdropping, but I couldn't help but hear. He was talking to someone and said, "Oh, I just got in from Hong Kong. I left my jacket with my wallet, all my identification, and all my cards in the lounge in Hong Kong." He says, luckily, I'm inside of security, so I can get on my plane, but I have no money for taxi, blah, 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 blah. So while he's talking on the phone, I just took out a $100 bill and said, here, you can get a taxi. After he got off the phone, he said, well, I was talking to my mother, and she's going to make arrangements, so I don't really need the money, but thank you for the offer. I could have pretended I didn't hear what he was saying. It would have been entirely socially acceptable. And it might not have been socially acceptable to say, oh, I happened to be eavesdropping on what you were saying, and... But it didn't really feel like I had a choice. When someone is in need, when someone is suffering, when someone has a predicament that each one of us, any one of us, could do something about, it doesn't ennoble us to ignore it. It doesn't. We may have excuses and habits and reasons, lack of time among them, and just don't get involved among them, to, well, pretend otherwise. And yet, when we do that, we miss the opportunity to really touch our life, to touch another person's life, to really make the most out of this moment. He felt happy, relieved, you know, connected, touched, recognized, and I felt pretty good too. It's available to us all the time if we take the opportunity. If we recognize the opportunity and take it to really proactively or reactively respond to the conditions or situation that we're in moment by moment, day in and day out. I got a ride from the airport here in Seattle and had a short lunch, and we were on our way to, I was being dropped off where I'm staying. And we came to an intersection, and there was a fellow sitting on a side of the road with a sign saying something, but basically looking for some financial support. And we pulled over, and the driver, my friend, gave him a dollar or two. And then went on to explain to me that when he inquired as to who these people were, sitting on the side of the road at all the entrances and exits of the freeways, and you know, they got their signs, and whatever their sign says, homeless or vet or kids or no job, we'll work for whatever. A lot of them are vets returning from one of the Mideast wars who just can't reintegrate. There's war going on. We're part of that war. It's not just for those people over there. It's not just our tax money going to support it. They're here among us. If you recognize it, if you take the opportunity to acknowledge what is clear and visible in front of us day in and day out, we can ignore it. We can blame. We can criticize. We can, you know, just pretend that it's not happening. But that doesn't ennoble our life. We can get by, it may be good enough, but we have something greater within us. We have a greater potential within us. And it doesn't take much. But it does take being aware. It takes recognizing what is going on here in each moment of your life. And to recognize the uniqueness of this moment for you, even if it's someone you see every day. Today, it's unique. It's never going to happen like this again. It never has happened like this before. And what can we make of it? What's the best that could come out of this for this person and for myself? Even a simple gesture of making an offering to a panhandler, a homeless person, a street person, it doesn't cost anything. You know, 5 seconds of time, $1 or a pocketful of change, and we give the gift of recognition, love, acknowledgement, and we both feel happy. We both feel the heart quiver, wake up, recognize it's alive. Here we are. And every day, we have dozens of opportunities like this, if we recognize it. And so we practice awareness, another one of these traits of all good human qualities. We have to be aware, this is what's going on, this is what the potential is, this is what's being offered to us in each moment, and then to take it. Now there are about, or nearly, 7 billion of us here on Earth, people, and a lot more other critters than that. That's a lot of people. Now, just think of the few, you know, a handful or a few dozen that are in your immediate surroundings. They're either your family, your friends, your neighbors, your coworkers. Do you know any of them? Any of them that aren't having a hard time with life? That don't find life really challenging, difficult, oppressive, painful, a struggle, physically, mentally, emotionally, financially, and otherwise? Do you know anyone? There's 7 billion of us. 7 billion. You know, and we know a few dozen. In every moment, we have the opportunity to offer something to someone, to acknowledge this fact of our life together. It's a challenge. It's hard. It's difficult. Sometimes we hurt, sometimes we suffer, sometimes we hurt each other, sometimes we hurt ourselves. And to know that, and to acknowledge it to yourself, and to acknowledge it to the other, and you don't have to say that with words, a gesture, a gift, a look that just lets the other person in. You know, that can make space for where that other person is and to connect with it and to know that it's not foreign and to let them know somehow. This is compassion in action. And all of the traits that ennoble our human life are compassionate. All of these qualities have this understanding in mind, are based on this understanding that we can help one another in a very simple human way. After my first meeting in the lounge with the guy who lost his identity and, well, lost his identification cards and credit cards. He didn't lose his identity, but he lost it. I went into the quiet part of the lounge because I had some time to be quiet. So I went into the quiet part, and in this quiet part of the lounge, there's no talking, there's no phones, there's no, you know, it's really nice. It's really quiet. There's nobody there. But there's some couches, and you know, there's a few empty chairs. So I sat on a couch, and I was just sitting quietly. I didn't get out a book to read or a magazine or a computer. And I was just sitting quietly, well, thinking about what I was going to talk about tonight, really. And I saw a couple come in, and they came in, and they were kind of, he was caring for her in some way. And they were looking around for a place to stay, and all the couches were taken, or at least they had one person on it, and there were some single chairs spread around the room. So I saw him kind of go over in the corner, and they sat down in one chair and another chair, and they were kind of apart, but they together. So I was sitting on a couch. So I gestured to the guy, "Would you want to sit here? I'll go sit over there." But eventually, I just got up and went and sat in a single chair. They got up and come over and sat on the couch together. And I could see that she was upset, something. I have no idea what. But they were able to be together in a caring way. And I was happy for that. I didn't have to get up. I could have laid on that couch all morning. But in recognition of the obvious and a willingness to acknowledge it, it was apparent what I could do to help them. So, I did. Again, it doesn't take much, but it takes awareness. It takes awareness of oneself, one's surroundings, each other, and it takes caring about one another. And this is, again, one of the universal, or a trait of these universal qualities of good human beings. Nobility and compassion. And from the examples I've given, you may notice or recognize that it doesn't really take much, but you do have to do something. We can have all the thoughts and all the feelings of love and compassion we want. And that's good. It prepares us to act in the world. But if we don't act, if we don't take the means available to us, then we miss an opportunity. And so, how we express the qualities of our heart is important. To really find the means available in whatever the situation is, to just creatively respond or creatively, proactively seek for the opportunity to be generous, be kind, be understanding, be compassionate. Sometimes we think that, and I myself fall into this trap, this hole of thinking, well, what can I do? Well, that's just a lack of creativity. There's a lot to do. There's a lot that can be done. And each one of us has a gold mine of skill. A gold mine, really, of just knowledge, emotion, understanding, for responding to the conditions around the world, around our world. You don't have to go abroad, around our world. And this willingness to be creative, to act on what we know, and to act on our compassion, it's a potential within us. We have tremendous resources, each one of us. Absolutely tremendous resources. Personal skills, knowledge, financial skills, information. We just have, more than we know what to do with sometimes. And it's the knowing what to do with it that needs to be developed. And allowing ourselves to just be creative, to just really look at the situation with a fresh vision, and to know that you have something to offer. There's not much else you can do to feel better than that. Do you want to be happy? you want to feel useful in your life, you want to feel connected, if you want to address the feelings of alienation and polarization and isolation and disagreeableness and blaming that is rampant around us, you want to address that? Share your life. If you can't find somebody to share it with, you're not looking. Your eyes are closed, your heart is closed. It's everywhere. Help yourself to happiness. It's free. It just takes being awake, aware, being compassionate, recognizing the opportunity, the potential within you, and then acting on it. And you don't have to be Mother Teresa, and you don't have to be Martin Luther King, and you don't have to be Aung San Suu Kyi, and you don't have to be recognized by anyone. In fact, it might be better to practice anonymity, to really be as humble as these gestures of humanity really are. Well, we don't have to make much ado about anything, because simplicity really is a virtue, if we only knew how to be simple. I don't mean to be a simpleton, but I mean how to really be straight, clear, uncomplicated, uncontrived, and responsive. We can. But we have to let go of all kinds of narcissistic baggage. To kind of be simple. Because that's where human life happens, really. The real humanity of life happens at a very simple level. And we sometimes lose it for long periods of time, caught up in some self-aggrandizing scheme of success and ambition, and all kinds of things obscure the simplicity of what's going on in our human relationships. But you know, just like when I overheard the fellow on the phone in the lounge, we have these conditioning, we have these social conditionings, these prohibitions, we have these areas of our life that we censor, that we don't allow, that we somehow believe are not permitted, somehow, socially, economically, politically, spiritually. There's all kinds of boundaries and barriers that proscribe our life. And it takes a very simple mind to see through them, to see around them, to not be caught in them. And this simplicity comes from really knowing yourself cleanly, really knowing yourself in an unadulterated, unfabricated way. And recognizing again and again what touches you. If you recognize what touches you in your contact with others, you'll have all the lessons you need of how to live and be a good human being. If we pay attention, we'll see. We'll acquire all the skills we need to do that. I think we all recognize a potential, a greater potential within us than we have yet realized. I don't think there's any of us here, and maybe those who have don't come here. Those who might have realized more of themselves, more of what's possible. But I don't think any of us have reached the limit of what we can do, what we can recognize within ourselves. It's a choice we have. It's a choice we have every moment, every day. And it's not remote. It's not vague. It's not foreign. It's personal for each one of us to make this choice. And we have this opportunity. And it takes knowledge, of course. It takes trust. It takes energy. It takes creativity. It takes a willingness. It takes a confidence, a self-assurance. It takes initiative. But we have all this. Everything in life is workable. Everything. There isn't anything that one of us is ever going to face in life that is unworkable. Can't be dealt with. Everything can be dealt with. We'll see as time goes on. We think otherwise. We limit ourselves. We pretend otherwise. We succumb to, you know, kind of self-pity and victimization and thinking that, oh, it shouldn't have to be this way. Who are we blaming? God? This is our life. This is it. We have the opportunity to take full advantage, and we can deal with anything. It may not be what we want. It may not be what we like. It may not be what we're familiar with or what we expected. And we know there's a lot of that going on. I don't know if any of us plan to be in this situation, economically, politically, socially, and otherwise, that we find ourselves in. And yet, well, we're all dealing with it, like it or not. But we can help each other. And that's a choice we have also. If we understand the benefit of really helping each other, and the benefit not just to the other person, but the benefit to ourselves, then it's easier to make that choice, to make the decision to act in a way that ennobles our life by acting compassionately in a very simple, humble way. And what do you get out of it? If somebody said, what's in it for me? What's in it for me? Well, you can only know if you do it. There's no words that I could say that could come close to acknowledging what's in it for you. A fullness of life that, well, can't be beat, so to speak. How do you talk about that when we don't yet know what that is? So this is what I want to speak about this evening, or introduce this evening, and this is what I'll be speaking more about this weekend, on Saturday and Sunday. Some of the specific qualities of heart and mind that we can actively cultivate to be aware of and to develop in our own life and to act on in the world as a way of really becoming all that we can be, and to make the most out of every moment situation with every person that we meet. See you there, or I should say, see you here. So, that was kind of quieting, sobering. Do you have any comments or questions? How about a challenge for me? And as you know, if you don't have questions for me, I have questions for you. So just taking a look and a nod of recognition makes a difference. Well, it makes a difference to you to offer that. Do you think it makes a difference to them?
Yeah. I mean, it appears
yeah.
so.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean,
but
I do the same.
Still, you know, because otherwise, like, there's a lot of, you know, I'm going in the grocery store, and, you know, I mean,
yeah.
everybody
Yeah, I agree with you. I know exactly what you mean, that making a simple gesture of recognition to a panhandler, a homeless person, really reduces, well, in my case, and as you said, reduces some hostility, but to me, it reduced my fear and my isolation or alienation from them. And suddenly they look like, oh, an ordinary human being, not some scary person that's going to hit on me for something. And it's like, I don't want to have to deal with it. And that's my mind. And by, you know, as you say, being willing to connect with that person and maybe offer them a you know, a gesture of support, whether it's change or how are you, or an extended conversation of how are you or how's it going today. I mean, that's like a, that's, you got to be really courageous to care about what you're going to get for an answer. Yeah. One of the questions I ask panhandlers or street people is, how much do you need? What do you need? I get some interesting answers. You know, from $2 to do my laundry to $100, which is more than laundry. But what's offered in return, whether it's $1 or $2 or $10, is love. Love. That's the real commodity of human interaction. And it doesn't cost anything. It just, you just have to put aside your fear and your isolation, your alienation, your naivete, your lack of awareness, your delusion, your denial, and kind of get real. You know, get really simply real with, oh, this is the way it is right now. As I stand here about to go in the grocery store and this is what's going on. Boom, this is the way it is. That's good. Other experiences dealing with reality you want to share? Charlotte?
Well, how do you deal with the concept that they meet hungry ghosts?
You what, the concept?
That they meet the hungry ghost.
Hungry ghost. Never going to be what?
It may not be enough assistance.
Yeah.
Ghosts.
Sure. Oh, yeah. So the fear that you have is that they're hungry ghosts, and no matter how much you give, they're still not going to be satisfied. Mm-hmm. Kind of like my mind. You know, no matter how much I get, no matter how much I do, no matter how much I have, still not satisfied. Like that, you mean? I know that. You know, we have stories that we imagine about these people. You know, we project all kinds of our own fears, fantasies, imaginations on them, and often it prevents us from taking the opportunity to have a moment of human contact and be happy for the rest of the day. Yeah? So, you got to remember, we're not trying to solve the world's problems. We're not trying to fix anybody forever. That's not possible. But in this moment, we can touch someone and there can be this human interchange, and there can be a moment of love. Okay, maybe they need another hit of love later in the day. You can come back. Yeah, I mean, we're all hungry ghosts, really, to use that phrase. We're all looking for more. More contact, more this, more recognition, more anything. So, let them have it. Give them all they want, all that you got, all the extra that you've got. You know, I'll tell you, you'll feel better for it. Maybe they won't be satisfied, but you will. Yeah.
Really noting that.
Mm.
And other differences as well.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering what advice you have around the relationship between seeing something like that come up and then acting out of generosity.
Yeah.
And so in that moment, what's happening for you, let's say?
Yeah. It's great. You know, I mean, when you ask yourself, what keeps me from having this human contact with people all the time? Fear, anger, blame, judgment, desire, shame, you know, all hindrances. They all come up. When they do, of course, if you see them, great, that's fine. There are antidotes to all of them, right? You know, the antidote to fear or anger is metta, loving kindness. So when you see the homeless person, for example, that we've been talking about, and you feel anger, why are they doing that? Why are they there? Why don't they get a job? You know, whatever. Or maybe you feel afraid. Oh, they're dirty, they're, you know, scruffy looking, whatever, you know, and you feel afraid. What's the antidote? Yes, I am.
to give them love. I don't know the specific antidote, but I would say to offer love.
Correct. And you know how simple it is? Just look them in the eye. How's it going today? How are you doing today? You getting much handouts today? I mean, that's all. You don't even have to give them anything. Just your attention, your genuine, considerate, caring attention. And anything else would be welcome too, but, and it's not just for them, it's for you. You're the one who's suffering with the fear. You're the one who's suffering with the blame. You're the one who's suffering from the judgment. You're the one who's suffering from the, I don't like being accosted by them. You're the one who's suffering. They're just there doing their thing. How are you going to deal with your fear, your shame, your anger, your irritation? That's you. You got to deal with that. Thinking that they're never going to be there and there's never going to be another one there ever. That's delusion. There's always going to be those among us who are needy. Right? Always. Always. So, deal with your own fear. Deal with your own shame. Deal with your own blame game. And the way to do that is recognize it, but don't buy into it. Act to overcome it. Yeah. It's good to recognize the defilement, the hindrance that's in the way of your being connecting with someone. If you can't connect with someone for whatever reason, there's some defilement in the mind. Really? I wonder what that is. Yeah. Any other experiments in living the human life you want to share?
I just have found when I can be grateful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really helps today.
When you can be grateful for things.
Think about it.
Yeah.
That really helps open
What are you grateful for? Because he said, when I can be grateful, when I can recognize the things I'm grateful for, that really opens up his own heart and leads him.
I'm grateful for my son as a 7-year-old boy. I'm grateful for my dog, Ruby. quite a lot.
Yeah.
My friends, all my friends. Really lucky.
I agree. You know, gratitude is the, you know, it's the, well, as psychologists or psychiatrists or all those testers have determined, it is the most effective intervention for engendering a sense of immediate sense of well-being, is to express your gratitude. You want to feel better about yourself? Express your gratitude to someone, anyone. And we have so much to be grateful for. And for everything that we're grateful for, we owe a tremendous debt of gratitude. We just, you know, as bad as it might be for some of you, we're living at the top of the heap. Out of 7 billion currently on the face of the earth, and the other 7 billion that have gone before us, we are at the very top. As bad as it is for you, we're still at the top. There was that. Today is International Day of the Woman. Thank you. You know, as somebody was asked, where would we be without women? Not here. So, there was a big supplement in the USA Today newspaper, big multi-page supplement on all of the good things that are NGOs and corporations are doing for women in very dire conditions and situations in Asia, Africa, South America. Oh, it's just fantastic what some of the things they're doing. But When you read about the conditions that others live in, I don't have the exact statistic, but there were some, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of women. First of all, the average person in America uses 100 gallons of water a day domestically. Average. 100 gallons per person per day domestically. In, you know, some places in Africa, the average per person is 2.5 gallons. And it takes some women 8 hours a day to get that water for their family. 8 hours a day to get the 2.5 gallons per person in their family every day. We got a lot to be grateful for that we don't see. Every time you turn on the faucet, turn on the tap, remember how much gratitude we should have that it doesn't take 8 hours to get that 2 gallons of water. And health. 1 in 20, I think, in some places, women, pregnancy and delivery, major problems. It's just unheard of in the West. Things that there are complications in the West, but statistically, we're living at the top of the heap. We should be so grateful for everything, anything. Every day you wake up, you should be grateful that you had some sleep. You know, that you didn't have to kind of get woken up by the bombs and the, you know, the molesters of one sort or another, political, economic, personal. Wow, what have we got to complain about? I agree. Recognizing what you're grateful for, counting your blessings every day, is really a key and a good solid base for happiness. I agree. And it's free. You know what? It doesn't cost anything. You don't have to buy it. You don't have to have a do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do to get it. Don't have to pay a monthly fee. It's free. It's available. Help yourself, as they say. Happiness is available. Help yourself. Other suggestions, comments, things that work for you? Yeah.
I have a question on the other side. I think most of us who have practiced generosity have seen times when it's gone bad, and that, you know, what you intended to do, what actually happened, probably for no benefit at all, in fact, it might have been negative. Mm. Is that just the kind of the cost of being in the generosity business, or what lesson do you learn from that? How to try to stop him being generous?
Yeah, In practicing generosity or in being generous, there's a couple of things you want to be aware of. One is your motivation. What are you doing? Well, I'm intending to offer something so that this person can be better off somehow, right? It can be to the homeless person, it can be otherwise. That's your intention. In the very act, you have fulfilled your intention, be happy. What happens after that? Well, you can't know. Sometimes we don't know. So I give, you know, $5 to the homeless person, they go out and buy drugs and do harm to themselves. Well, when I know that, I can still be generous and I can be happy for being generous and I can still have the human contact, but it's a little bit contaminated because I may not be giving with full wisdom, as much understanding as I can. So I think it would be beneficial to become more knowledgeable and wiser in our practice of generosity. But to understand that you've still fulfilled your act of generosity, your intention to be generous by the offer. If the result of your offering doesn't come back and, or it comes back and kind of haunts you or taunts you or disturbs you, then we have to learn from that giving and see if there's a way that we can bring more wisdom to our generosity. Still, we want to address the problems or the situations that we find available to be generous towards, but to do it more skillfully. Yeah, and I know it's not easy, because people do what they're going to do. You know. Yeah. But I think that as we practice any of these human qualities, we'll see. Oh, this is a skillful thing to do, but you know, there's other times when we say, oh, that's not so skillful, I better take some other precautions, or I better do it a little differently. And gradually we learn how to be more skillfully loving, generous, humble, etc., etc., etc. But it's a learning process. That's why we have to cultivate awareness. We want to do all these things that we do with full awareness so that we learn from these experiences. We don't just kind of throw it overboard and say, good luck, I hope it reaches the intended the intended recipient and it's beneficial to them. Not good enough. Good enough to have the intention, but to follow through, also good. Better. And I know, Roger and I do some practice generosity together in Burma a lot. And so, sometimes it doesn't work out the way we intend. Nevertheless, we're suckers. We'll go back and do it again. We're learning, though. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's Charlotte says that she gives to, what's the name of the place?
Solid Ground.
A group that distributes it to homeless people in a way that they see that's effective and it gets used well. That's great, because then that addresses your anxiety or concern about what if, you know, they're going to buy drugs or alcohol, you know, who knows what. That's good. And don't miss the opportunity to have that person-to-person, human, hand-to-hand, eye-to-eye, heart-to-heart contact. You know, institutions and NGOs and charitable organizations and all that, they do great work, but geez, they're impersonal. Excuse me. You know, often it's just like, you know, it's hard to feel inspired sometime about your donation that just is anonymous. You know, it just goes off to a, you know, it's a check to somebody that, you know, 60% of it goes into maintaining their office in New York, and 40% maybe gets to the people in Africa or whatever. A little bit, you know, got to look into that stuff. But the one that you mentioned, I'm not commenting about that, but sometimes we have to be really knowledgeable. Yeah?
I have had about 22 years of experience in a kind of a dicey part of town.
You've had 22 years?
I had 22 years experience having a business in sort of a dire part of town.
Yeah. Yeah.
And overcome a lot of fears and
had
close contact with them. And therefore I knew that money would always go towards their addiction. As a matter of fact, I had one friend who gave one fellow I knew who was a Native American on the street $100. And the Native American, whose name was Bear, came to me a couple days later and he said, "Oh, I bought a great single malt scotch for that one." Mm-hmm. And it was made sort of a joke of this generosity. And so I contrived a way of giving something else. So every fall at Costco, I'll buy a big bag of big thick socks. And giving out socks is something, you know, they can't get socks at Goodwill. Something they never have new socks.
Cool.
But one thing I ask in return is that they give me their name.
Yeah.
So that you know, I want something back, and that is your name.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Yeah, I think giving what is, you know, appropriate, is also a skill. You know, to give what's appropriate for the person is a skill. Not always. We don't know what's appropriate, but if we do, if we can find that out, I think that will enhance the. Our own understanding, and the value of our own giving. So I think that's really good. Yeah, to give what's appropriate, to give with you know, in a face to face, hand to hand, personal way is also good. Yeah. Yeah. Other stories of experiments in living the human life. I like that. Experiments in living. Yeah. That Rodney cuts right to the chase. Your insight was correct, and Rodney's admonition was also correct. Yeah. It's good to see through the conditioned relationship we have to money, careers, you know, families, you know, political parties, all that. It's good to see through it, knowing that they're here, we deal with them, you know, they're going to be around for a long time, and we're going to have a relationship with them. But it's good to see it insightfully, really, to see deeply into the nature of it and to make the adjustments as appropriate, you know, so that we're not caught in some conditioned relationship to any of it, but that we really are creatively present in each moment with people and money and otherwise. Yeah, that's why we practice. That's why we go on retreat. That's why we spend time kind of out of the flow of ordinariness. You know, when you go on retreat, you're not in ordinary time. You're not in ordinary space. You're not in ordinary relationships. You get to see through things a little bit so that when you come back into what are familiar surroundings, oh, you see them differently. You know, that's what insight is. You come back from an insight or after an insight. Everything is the same, but you understand it all differently. Right? And therefore, when you understand it differently, then you have a different relationship with it, and you can kind of, well, ennoble your life, and you can be freer. Yeah. You still got to deal with money. You still got to deal with family. You still got to deal with political parties. You still got to deal with all that stuff. But you're not dealing with it from such a conditioned, a blindly conditioned place. Yeah. You saw what?
I slowed down on that one. I'm quite a civil person.
Yeah, we learn a lot about ourselves on retreat. Anybody here who hasn't done a retreat, like a week-long silent meditation retreat? Anybody here who hasn't done that? Hold your hand up. I want to see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10, 15, 20. I have a special message for you. Do not let your life go by without doing one. You will have missed an unbelievable human experience. Try to be quiet for a week. Try to not speak for a week or 9 days, whatever it is, and just really be with yourself. You will learn something that you can't learn in any other way. Guarantee. You can talk to all the other people that didn't raise their hand, and you'll get that message from them, right? Mm. Yeah.
If I don't complain, then that's a form of generosity with other people, they don't hear it.
So the comment is she's been observing her own communication, and one area is noticing her own complaining. And when she doesn't complain, it's a form of generosity to others because they don't have to hear it. Thank you very much. I'll come stay with you next year. Looking closely at asking questions.
What is the motivation behind asking questions?
Oh.
The thinking ahead about the consequence of asking a question. Are you going to be there to listen to the answer?
Yeah.
It's just bringing more thoughtfulness to having some space in between people too and the conversation.
Yeah. So really looking to see the motivation behind questions and to...
Well, sometimes questions can have an agenda behind it.
Sometimes they can. Almost always. Yeah. Complaining, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Complaining doesn't go anywhere, but everybody hears it. You know what I mean? It's like complaining. But, oh, hard to live with. Yeah. Well, 9 o'clock-ish. So, maybe we should wrap up, huh? Yeah. So, thank you all for coming and for sharing your interest, your energy, and your curiosity and your questions. I always appreciate an attentive audience, and it's some Dharma dialoguing. So thank you very much. And if you have nothing else to do Saturday or Sunday, you can come over to Bastyr and we'll continue the discussion with some silent sitting and walking. What is the scheduled time for tomorrow and at Bastyr? I don't know, probably 9 to 4. I don't know. 9 to 4:30? 9 to 4:30. Yeah. Fairly well.